next speaker is Sergei Gaev. Good morning.
Yes, Sergei Gaev.
And we'll talk about recombination.
I'm not quite from that heroic generation of the 60s. I'm rather from the immediate next generation. My PhD was about radio recombination lines, and my official PhD supervisor was Roman Savchenko, who discovered radio recombination lines, and Solomon Pichler, well known to interstellar matter people. I came to Gaish Sternberg Institute in Moscow State University in 1968, and had the opportunity to observe some of the heroes of my talk today, including Yossi Shklovsky and Nikolai Kardashov, and many others. It would be hard to find people today who started it all. The story stretches back to times when atomic physics didn't exist. The names of Balmer and Rydberg come to mind, and it continued in the era of quantum mechanics, Fermi, and Jim already mentioned Donald Menzel and Unzolt and others. I would think that we are lucky in this area of radio recombination lines that we have a beautiful book of Mark Warden and Roman Sarachenko, my students call it the book. Webster Dictionary defines the Fanti River as a very difficult child to manage, but incredibly rewarding eventually, and this was about radio recombination lines. This iconic picture shows some radio recombination lines in the radio spectrum, hydrogen, alpha, and helium, and carbon, and beta lines, and so on. By the way, this nomenclature of radio recombination lines was first proposed by Palmer and Zuckerman in their work in 1966, and they suggest that, for example, transition between principal quantum numbers 167 and 166 should be denoted as hydrogen H166 alpha. And two lines below, they say that therefore N to N minus 1, N to N minus 2, N to N minus 3 should be alpha, beta, and gamma, which created a lot of confusion because they had to write N plus 1 to N, N plus 2 to N, N plus 3 to N. In physics, radio recombination lines did a lot. Basically, they answered the question how many atomic levels can exist. Amazing book of quantum mechanics. Works beautifully to unbelievably high principal quantum numbers like N1000, the state when the simplest quantum system, the hydrogen atom, becomes 1 million times bigger in size than ordinary atom, as big as 0.1 millimeter. Spectral line problem theory was significantly reconsidered and refined. Currently, it is very important for diagnostics of the nuclear plasma in nuclear reactors, and the nature of atomic masers were discovered, and so on. In astronomy, of course, there is diagnostics of H2 regions and discovery of C2 regions, cold photodissociation regions, and direct measurements of cosmic ray ionization rate in the Milky Way galaxy, most accurate estimate of the helium abundance, properties of star forming galaxies, and so on. Probably I start this story from this person, Henk van Hulst, who proposed to observe 0.1 centimeter spectral line. And his paper, which consisted of two parts, in the first part he considered transition between excited levels of hydrogen, and he came to a very strong conclusion that they are not observable. And the second part, which made him one of the greatest astronomers of the 20th century, he considered this link for 21 centimeter spectral line between hydrogen. If we look at this part, in fact, strangely enough, he takes 1.8 meter wavelengths into consideration, and they offer very comfortable levels, fortune and so on, they are really unobservable for many different reasons I will show later. Then he takes correctly the name of Ed Emmys and Ed Teller of 1939. He probably, let's say, hypothesis of Sullivan that instead of using 3 over 5 power, instead of using 5 over 3 power, he uses 3 over 5 and comes to this conclusion. So, false or true that when estimated sharp weights can quantities use 3 over 5 instead of 5 over 3. Neither is correct. If he used Ennis and Teller correctly, he would have to use impact sharp broadening, which would let him to 7 over 3. That would be correct. So anyway, and now we come to 1958, and young Nikolai Kardashev in the age of 25 in the Standard Institute library, he supervises his philosophy, and so Kitchener was less than 40 years old at that time. Kardashev wrote a paper which was absolutely brilliant paper. It was initially presented in the General Assembly of the International Astronomical Union in 1958 in Moscow to this fantastic radio astronomers, Ericsson and so on, among them. He published a few months later his paper, and it was published in the Astronomische Journal, Astronomical Journal, which was immediately translated as Soviet Astronomy Journal. It was a brilliant paper. It started from reference to work of Wild, 52, where Wild just quotes negative conclusion about the close. But the question is, did Kardashev, Shklovsky, and Peter know about the work of Van de Kulz? There is a legend that probably they were either so naive or so isolated from the rest of the world that they never heard of the work of Van de Kulz. It's absolutely not. Of course, everyone knows the work of Shklovsky, where he, of 1949, where he calculated the probabilities probability of this 21 significant transition, and he provides reference to Mandelbrot's paper, and now we talk about 10 years later, 1959. Those who knew Shklovsky, I remember his desk in Gaish, in Chicago Institute, was small and the reprints that came from around the world. So to think that Shklovsky would be isolated, it's an illusion. So back to Kardashev's brilliant paper. He considers all range of radio emission lines observed in the next 50 years from millimeter to decameter lines. He correctly estimates the line widths, calculates oscillator strengths and transition probabilities using many interesting approach to calculation of hypergeometric function, which is very important for this. He calculates line widths and line intensities, suggests the duration of lines of helium and other atoms. He suggests which objects are most suitable and can be observed first, including the galactic center. And then came the observational proofs of his work. It was in the another General Assembly of the International Astronomical Union, Perth, one in Hamburg in Germany, on Monday, 31st of August. I wonder if we have anyone here in this room who attended that can, yes. Jay, and anyone else? Right. And so we have these 3 people who attended it. What a great assembly. Look at these names. That's about change in the timetable. Professor Ord, will talk in different time, Dr. Koyo will talk in different room, opera of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Hochzeit Figaro, will be in 7:30. Seats in the opera must be taken not later than 7:25. And there was a joint session of commissions 36, 34, and 40 organized by this crowd. Session finished very late. I think Ken probably confirmed it.
No, not very late. And you managed to get to the opera to Marriage of Figaro.
I don't remember what I did.
So, in this joint session, in the end, 26 talks altogether, 26 and 24, were about detection of excited hydrogen lines. Alan Barrett was chair, and it was presented by not by the authors, but by different people. It was not easy to get Germany from Russia at the time, and it was presented by Viktor Vitkevich, the work of a group of Roman Sarachenko and from Pushina, and by Yuri Parisi, the group from Pulkova, its Dravskis and co-authors. This was visual material that was presented on the left hand side, spectra obtained by the Pushina group. Writing side by Pulkov group, and people who got accustomed to very strong major landscape line, OH maze lines at that time, were pretty skeptical about this very low signal to noise signals. Now, when we look at it, of course, there are spectral lines there. This exchange happened, Barry asked. Are you saying that you detected the excited hydrogen line 105, 104? Paris, yes. So let me repeat my question. Are you saying that this line can exist? Yes. And here people who discovered it, same person, Roman Sarachenko, in 1942, in the age of 15, he went to the World War II and was at the very end. And the other picture, his photo, last week in 2012, exactly 7 years after the same person. And maybe it was telescope for 22 meters, unfortunately, you can see. And another telescope, which was used by Kulkova group, it's a 30 meter telescope in Crimea and the spectrum. What I like about it is this, they show the change in the ELSAR. Motion of the Earth, the gradients look different just because the left hand side, which is in kilometers per second, the right hand side in megahertz. So that's how they should look. Early attempts, of course, happened. Pulkova group started search in 1958, and Australian radio astronomers John Bolton from Gardner and Brian Robinson tried to observe radio ionization lines in Mars. In 1963, by faith. And this is maybe myth, maybe real, that they used an approximate formula for the line frequency instead of accurate one. And I just calculated this accurate frequencies and approximate frequencies, and the difference actually is huge, 100 to 200, 300 total widths. This is a real spectrum. 100, 101, 102 lines, and this is where approximate formula sends you, just, you know, exactly between the technical nature of this approximate formula. And of course, I should mention, should tell about Metzger and his efforts. He started in 1960, 25 with a Bohm telescope, but failed. And then in 1963, he was detected. Published in 1965, Metzger published his paper, and which shows beautiful signal to noise spectral lines in Orion and Omega Nebula, and lack of radio illumination lines in non thermal sources, which was also very Unfortunately, they didn't show the spectrum a little bit wider. Look again at this spectrum obtained by this Ulkerman group. And this is the frequency of the human line. And can you see anything? Yes, probably. They didn't pay attention. Really, helium line was discovered by the group of Lenin and others, and they determined the abundance of helium in the center of plus minus 5, huge error, and huge integration time, 21 centimeters. And again, look, I'll zoom it. I think they could see carbon here on the wing of helium line. And actually, the same group is even as a report about the detection of carbon 1 year later. And the Leo Goldberg and Andrea Dupree could explain this observation and pointed the importance of the electronic recombination. I couldn't resist to show this picture from the Prague General Assembly, which was shown by a Ukrainian group. And there they found a radio illumination lysis principle of the number 1,000. This was incredible. And one more, just a couple more minutes about one more brilliant paper by Leo Goldberg. Leo Goldberg says about some discrepancy. The electron temperature that comes from radio illumination lights is 2 times lower than from optical measurements. And he says that this is because of two erroneous assumptions. One of them is the correction factor for stimulated emission is wrong. There should be correction factor takes into account the population of these lines. And then I like this very much. Significant enhancement can happen. The appropriate correction factor for stimulated emission is evidently this. I give it to my students as assignment. Get the right-hand side out of left-hand side. Have you ever tried it? That's a very nice exercise. Right, and then we come to this opportunity for maser amplification, called partial maser, because just absorption coefficient in the line was negative, not the net. Absorption coefficient 9 plus helium. Later, this true nature of atomic laser in radio illumination lights was discovered by Stevenson in 1999. And the whole area of very careful calculation of departure coefficients started. It's very hard computational problem. He mentioned, I think it was kind of a joke. Probably between two people. He said that that equation of transfer for central A may be written in the following form, suggested by C.A. Whitney, private communication. And then it comes a standard related transfer equation. I don't understand it. I wrote to Alan Whitney, any connection with C.A. Whitney, who can it be? He said, oh, this is Charles Whitney, long-term astronomer in Harvard, in Cambridge. I don't know, I don't understand this. And then came the spiral structure of galaxies and some exotic radio sources like MWC-349 and high order accumulation lines and beautiful works of Banyan and co-authors and helium abundances and fantastic images of the galactic center by a group of Miller Goss. But all this happened late in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and the study continues today. This is the study of the radio illumination lights.
Any questions to the speaker? I'm curious about what the oddity was about the private communication with Charles. Both of them were at Harvard at the time. Why would you cite him?
This is a problem for me.
It's a joke?
It was lecture. the miracle word behind the gate was too.
That's the sense of really transformation. Private communication.
But it was a joke about what? About the readers of the chair?
Between the inhabitants. And maybe before Charles Whitney wrote some address to the people.
But that's in a published peer reviewed journal.
John was
dead. John was dead, that's right. There's a real disconnect. Considering what, I mean, Charles Whitney was Smithsonian, Harvard, working in the scholar theory group. Bogard was, just became the director at the Harvard College Observatory. There was a dynamic between the two groups of stellar theorists that I think that would be interesting to pursue. What it means, why
he's a very strong.
A lot of more theorists that are
So you previously commented that those first results weren't accepted in the US. So what was the reaction in was accepted as being okay, or?
It was next year there were other papers who just confirmed the same position. Actually, the catalogs of really the ancient minds, their line temperatures get mixed, feel mixed, and they confused me to it. And I feel like it's correct.
Okay. Considering its search or its discussion of carbon recombination line at the time.
Can I take it in?
Carbon recombination line. Was there a discussion or was there a search at that time?
Yes, it was discovered, as I said, in 1967.
Oh, I didn't.
In H2 regions. And then there was a whole big area of carbon lines in all the matter ionized by cosmic rays. Yes, Jim.
Can I have somebody who was there to comment? The story I heard was a presentation in Hamburg given early late today in the Russians Ukraine with Transmaris or whatever they were using this very important.
Yeah, overhead.
Yes. And so that's why Barrett was saying, you know, are you really saying something there?
The signal to noise ratio, literally, you know, that you can see on the screen, is only about 2 to 3.
Okay, thank you very much. We are waiting just a little moment.
Even today, computer doesn't work.
Yeah.
We're trying to